welcome to the New Beginnings Message of the Week. We hope you enjoy this message from our Sunday service. For more information about our church, please visit us online at newbeginningscos.com.
We're talking about 2.0, things that are beyond the basics, just discipleship concepts that I think are incredibly important and valuable, but don't get talked about very often. And so today I want to talk about the being refreshed in the wilderness. I want to talk about fasting. And I'm really excited by this topic because of the outcomes of it. I'm really not excited about this topic because I love food. Fasting is not, it has been an incredible gift to me, but it's also that thing where it's like, who wants to do that? Who wants to talk about that? Who wants to go there? But I want to start with Jesus. It's always a good place to start, right? Luke 5, verse 16 says, "So he himself often withdrew into the wilderness and prayed." That one verse packs such a punch. And again, I think sometimes we read over things and we miss the meat of it. And it's saying he himself often withdrew into the wilderness and prayed. The three things I pull out of that is, one, he went alone. Two, he did it often. And three, he chose the wilderness. Isn't it interesting that he chose the wilderness as his place to go and to pray? You know, God is often drawing people away from what's normal for them. He's often drawing people away into a place that's off to the side of the beaten path. And I think one of the big reasons for that is we get so stuck in the loudness and the noise and the momentum of life that we have a really hard time recognizing his voice and his presence in the midst of that. And so it's interesting that Jesus gets called aside into the wilderness. And it's the same with Moses in the burning bush, right? Moses actually had to turn aside to go to the burning bush. David and his sheep, he's going and hiking across these hills, over days and nights with these sheep. And it's in those places that are not filled with people, that are actually filled with silence, where people are meeting with God. So like I said, Jesus, he did it alone, he did it often, and he chose the wilderness. Jesus is modeling for us the components of a strong spiritual life with God. So when it says that he did something often, I think it's really important that we take particular note of that. If he did it often, it's something we should really pay attention to. So when we think of a wilderness, like I said, it's deliberately apart from the normal places of life. It's empty, it's barren, it's like a desert. And that can be scary. Wilderness, if you're looking at the definition, could be defined as an uncultivated, uninhabited, and inhospitable region, or a neglected or abandoned area of a garden or town. Gosh, there's so many. Guys, I could talk about this for the next 2 hours because just here I'm pulling out different passages of scripture and verses and things that God has taught us. But let's just capture the idea that it's empty. It's barren. It's not hospitable. It's not fun. Nobody's like, hey, what should we do today? Let's go to the wilderness. Like, it's uninviting. And it's interesting that the first time that Jesus goes there, it's a place that's filled with two things. It's filled with the voice of the enemy, and it's filled with wild beasts. In Mark 1, 12, and 13, Jesus was just baptized, and after he was baptized, the voice of God breaks out, and he goes, "This is my son whom I love," and everybody hears it, and it says right after that revelation, it says he was driven into the wilderness. It says immediately the Spirit drove him into the wilderness, and he was there in the wilderness 40 days, tempted by Satan, and was with the wild beasts. And it says, and the angels ministered to him. So the first time he goes, he's facing temptation and wild beasts. I think when I look at this picture of him going into the wilderness and experiencing this, he's getting the temptation from the devil. I don't know what it means that wild beasts were around him. I mean, it might just mean that he's sleeping in the desert. For 40 days and 40 nights, he's out there, and he's hearing, I don't even know what kind of wild animals, lions, jackals, I don't know what's out there, but he's hearing the beasts and he's surrounded by them. And that's what the wilderness is filled with. It's not filled with people. It's not filled with noise. It's not filled with distractions. It's actually filled with a semblance of danger. And when most of us think about what it would feel like to go to a place of silence, to go to a place of solitude, to go to a place of quietness, it feels very scary to us. And I think one of the reasons that we fear to step into those places is because it forces us to confront the thoughts and the feelings that we spend most of our time burying. We don't actually address a lot of the emotions and thoughts that come up in our lives. We push them to the side. And then when we think about going to the place of quietness, to the place of wilderness, the places of emptiness, we know what's waiting for us there. All the stuff that we've been pushing down, all the stuff we've been burying. And honestly, the voice of the enemy is there too, saying, you can't handle this. You're not good enough. Getting quiet and getting alone is only going to expose how gross you are, and you don't want to deal with that. Why don't you just go do this other thing instead? So we avoid the wilderness in general. We avoid places where we have to be quiet. In fact, I think we sometimes over-spiritualize our busyness. It's ministry. It's, you know, even in our words to other people, we don't become good listeners. We're really good at saying what we want to say, what we think needs to be said, because sitting back and listening forces us to absorb someone else's information. And that's, again, that can feel scary. That can feel like, hey, there's wild beasts out there. I don't know what's going to happen. I can't control other people, but if I can insert myself into the situation, I can choose where this is going to go from here. So there's three phases of Jesus' journeys in the wilderness that I think we can learn from that really can be important and valuable for us. The first is the fact that he's driven out initially. He's driven into the wilderness by the Spirit, and in the wilderness, it's what it's filled with, if anything, is danger. But after he is triumphant in that, after he triumphs against the temptation of the enemy, he goes out again. The second time he goes into the wilderness, the second phase of it, is that he's drawn. He's drawn by the Spirit. Mark 1:35 says, "And rising very early in the morning, while it was still dark, he departed and went out to a desolate place, and there he prayed." So the first time, it's a place of testing. The second time, it's a place of intimacy and connection. So the second time, he's drawn by the Spirit. He gets up very early and goes to a desolate place and enters into prayer. Now, here's what happens the third time, and I find this very interesting. Mark 1:45. This is all just in one chapter. Mark 1:45, it says, "Jesus could no longer openly enter a town, but was out in desolate places, and people were coming to him from every quarter." So get this. There's three phases. The first time he goes out, he's facing, there's wild beasts, there's the voice of the enemy. The second time he goes out, it's a place of intimacy and quietness. He's able to go and just connect with God alone because the enemy has already been driven out. And then the third time, now the wilderness, the place of desolation, the place of aloneness and quiet, is being filled with people. He can't go into a town, but there are multitudes of people and crowds of people that are coming and filling that wilderness. And now it's not the voice of the enemy that's echoing in the wilderness. It's the voice of Jesus. It's the voice of God. Do you see that connection? See, what happens in us is we fear to go into that place of quietness and solitude because we know we're going to face the distractions, the wild beast, all of the things that we just don't want to face. But if we would actually follow the progression of Jesus, we'd actually find that this is the pathway to filling your mind with the thoughts of God. You know, the word says that we have the mind of Christ. It's not we can have the mind of Christ. It's not that he wants to give us the mind of Christ. It says we have the mind of Christ. But the problem is, when we have the mind of Christ and we've got our own mind filled with so much of our own stuff, we can't access it. We can't live out of it. We can't actually connect with him because there's so much noise. And I think sometimes we're so scared of going out there because we know, listen, going to the place of quiet actually has the opposite effect most of the time. Most of the time, when you begin to step into the place of quiet, your brain fills with noise and distractions. You might as well turn on just a really loud white noise machine and then try to hear somebody from across the room. Like that's kind of what it feels like at first. And that's why we avoid it. But if we don't go through the process of facing that, we can't get to the other side where it's filled with not just the presence and the voice of God, but impact. How interesting is it that the place of wilderness became the place of intimacy with God and then it became the place of impact. The influence of Jesus spread, and the wilderness was filled with impact and with authority. I believe that's what God wants to do with us. And sometimes we want to move over to this place of impact and authority. I want to obey you, God. I want to do what you've called me to do. And so we skip everything, and we just step over here, and we're like, God, I'm speaking to the people and to the masses, and I'm trying to get people to listen to you, and nobody's listening. Nobody cares. Nobody is coming. And our influence is not there because we have not walked through emptying the wilderness of everything else. There's an emptying that has to take place. Our impact comes from the place of intimacy and connection. We can't just skip over. We've actually got to walk through like Jesus showed us. Now, here's the interesting thing. It's not just Jesus is out there and he's connecting with God. And I think sometimes we think of connection with God as explicitly feeling his presence. And that's what we want, right? We want the presence of the Lord. But if we have to define what feeling the presence of the Lord is like, I think sometimes we think feeling the presence of the Lord is when my emotions get really big. Or we say feeling the presence of the Lord is when we just try to define it and we try and narrow it down. And I think sometimes the presence of the Lord is here and he's moving and we want to feel it in a certain way. And because we want to feel it in a certain way, we actually don't feel it at all. And the Lord's like, hey, I'm here. I'm right here. And we're like, where are you? Where are you? And he's like, it's not in the feelings right now. Today, it's not in the feelings. Today, it's just in the peace. Today, it's just in, sometimes it's just in the fruit. Did you know sometimes the presence of God is actually just in the fruit of our lives? Sometimes I find, actually this morning as I was praying and pursuing him, I just really felt him giving this strong encouragement that the fruit of the Spirit, the fruit of his presence in our lives, isn't always what we feel. Sometimes it's what we manifest outwardly. When I walk in the fruit of the Spirit, I'm in his presence. I'm with him, and I'm connected to him. I can't walk in that fruit without being connected to him. It's interesting. This is total side note, but the fruit of the Spirit, love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control. You've got all these fruit, and sometimes we think like, man, I have the fruit of the Spirit of love, but I don't have the fruit of the Spirit of patience, or I really need to grow in this fruit. And you know, the word is singular. It's fruit, not fruits. It's not multiple fruits. It's one fruit. The fruit of the Spirit is all of those things. In fact, it actually says the fruit of the Spirit is all of these things. And so when we're connecting with him, sometimes it's not about what my emotions are telling me. It's about that I'm able to walk like him because I've been with him. You know, it's interesting that when Moses came off the mountain, it says his face was shining so bright that they couldn't look at his face. They had to cover his face with a veil. But what's interesting to me is I don't think he knew it at first. I don't think he came down the mountain going, my face is, he didn't know it. But I think other people were like, once you see people coming at you like this, you're like, hey, something's going on, right? And again, sometimes the presence of the Lord in our lives is like that. I think sometimes we think it's a waste of time to go after him in his presence because I'm not feeling it. And so we cut it off early. And we don't recognize that the longer we're with him, it doesn't matter what we're feeling. We're going to come out shining more like him. So when we talk about the wilderness or the desert, there's a special, unique reason that this is the place that Jesus kept choosing. You know, the word for wilderness is Bamidbar in Hebrew. Bamidbar. And it's actually the same word that they use for the book of Numbers. I don't know why. We call it Numbers, but it's actually called wilderness. That's the actual name of the book. The book is called Bamidbar. And the root word of Bamidbar is Dabar. And Dabar means to speak from the heart. How interesting is it that the same word for wilderness, emptiness, comes from a root that means to speak from the heart? You know, in that day and age, in that era, if a young couple was in love and they wanted to have a private conversation, there weren't a lot of places you could go where you wouldn't be overheard, because you've got these bustling cities and you've got parents, and then you've got, listen, it's not like you just go to a different part of town, because everybody knows everybody else, and anybody else sees you speaking together, they're going to go talk to the parents and word's going to get around. So a young couple in love would actually go to the wilderness. And in the wilderness, look, it's a place where there's no water. There's no reason anybody would go there. It's not like they go, the well is over here. There's a high traffic area. The paths and roads where people are going to and fro. So they'd go out to the wilderness, and that was a place, it was like a lover's hideaway. It was a place where they could have a private conversation and commune with each other and connect with each other and not have to worry about it being overheard. And in the same way, in Numbers, the Lord brings Israel into the wilderness, and the whole point is it's the place where he gets to be in connection with them, to speak over them, and to grow that heart of love. And you see that Moses and Joshua went after that. They kept going to the tent of meeting, and they're getting more and more exposed to his love, more and more exposed to his presence. All of Israel had that same opportunity if they wanted it. So Midbar, wilderness, this idea of a place where we can go, and it's not just about it being empty. It's actually the place of a connection with the Lord. It's a place of communion. It's a place of his loving expression to us. The thing about that is we have to become empty before we can become filled. Proverbs 27:7 says, when your soul is full, you turn down even the sweetest honey, but when your soul is starving, every bitter thing becomes sweet. If we live our lives with our souls being full, the good stuff, the honey of his words and his presence, we're not going to want it. We're not going to go after it. And it's powerful when you recognize that your life can be full of good things and you could be missing the greatest things. It's powerful when you recognize that sometimes it's not just saying no to the bad things. It's not saying no to sin. Listen, that's good. That's like basic foundational step. But actually, sometimes it's saying no to good things to get the best things. Because if we are so full that we don't want to go after his presence, then what we are carrying to give away is not him. So Jesus emptied himself in the wilderness, and he emptied the wilderness of the enemy's voice and filled it with his own. The breakthrough that Jesus experienced came through fasting. When he went in the wilderness, he was there fasting for 40 days. So for 40 days, Jesus is battling with the enemy's voice. The wild animals are all around, and he's fasting. He's not eating. He didn't have food or water for 40 days. I don't recommend that kind of fast in general. I know some people who've done 40-day fast, not without water, but without food. But think about what Jesus was doing. He emptied himself of food. And in that same space, he knew he was going to have this battle with the enemy. But after that, the breakthrough came where the wilderness was no longer filled with the voice of the enemy. It was filled with the presence of God. See, I think sometimes we don't realize that we want his presence, and we're pushing for it, and we're going after him, and we're trying. How many of you felt like, man, I try, and I try, and I try, and every time I spend time in his presence, I even get in a good rhythm and a good habit of it, but I can't feel him. Nothing changes. It feels like nothing's happening. Anybody ever experienced that? Fasting is one of the ways that we can break through. It's interesting that you know, we can fast all kinds of things. You know, you can fast social media, you can fast movies, you can fast coffee or caffeine, you can fast all kinds of things, but there's something uniquely powerful about fasting from food. There's something uniquely shifting through fasting food. And God actually equates fasting with the refreshing that comes from rest. You know, when you work really, really hard and you get that first moment when you lay down on the couch and you're just like done, that kind of rest, and you just let your body refill. And it's like, have you ever felt like just the accomplishment of getting a hard project done, but the excitement of knowing you don't have to do it anymore? That kind of resting, that's what God equates fasting with. And Isaiah 58 is kind of the chapter that we talk about for fasting, right? Isaiah 58, God says, is this not the fast I have chosen? And he's like, you guys are fighting with each other. You're quarreling. You're causing all this strife. And your hunger is making you so grumpy. And listen, that's the biggest thing about fasting, is it can make you really grumpy. And so God's noticing this, and he's saying, you guys are just using this as an excuse to fight. This is not helping. He says, is not this instead the kind of fasting I've chosen? And he says, fasting looks like taking the chains off of the oppressed and feeding the poor and taking care of the orphan and the fatherless and the widow. And that's all what we normally look at, but I want to look at the rest of that chapter. So Isaiah 58, starting in verse 11, breaks into another level of what God actually exposes fasting can accomplish in our lives. So starting in verse 11, it says, the Lord will guide you continually and satisfy your soul in drought and strengthen your bones. This is the result of fasting. It says the Lord will guide you. So you want guidance? He will guide you continually. He will satisfy your soul, right? The soul that is satisfied loathes even the honeycomb, but the soul that's satisfied with God has the honeycomb inside of it, right? He says, you shall be like a watered garden and like a spring of water whose waters do not fail. Catch this again. The verse before, he says, satisfy your soul in drought. The Lord will satisfy your soul in drought. In drought means with lack, right? So in drought, in the time where there's no water, in the time when you are fasting and voluntarily saying, I'm putting myself in a voluntary drought of food, the Lord says, I will satisfy you with waters that won't end, waters that don't fail, waters that will keep on going. He's saying, in our fast of food for our bodies, spiritually, we're going to be filled up to a whole other level. Those from among you shall build the old waste places. You shall raise up the foundations of many generations, and you shall be called the repairer of the breach, the restorer of streets to dwell in. If you turn your foot away from the Sabbath, from doing your pleasure on my holy day, and call the Sabbath a delight, the holy day of the Lord honorable, and shall honor him, not doing your own ways, nor finding your own pleasure, nor speaking your own words, then you shall delight yourself in the Lord. So the Lord is saying, look, when you withdraw and you fast and you honor my Sabbath, so look, he's equating fasting with rest, right? The whole point of the Sabbath is I'm not doing the things that normally would fill me with pleasure. It's not work, and it's also not, I'm not doing all of the normal stuff. I'm actually filling myself on the Lord. And he's saying, then you shall delight yourself in the Lord. What does Psalm say what happens when we delight ourselves in the Lord? He gives you the desires of your heart. Listen, fasting, emptying ourselves, this is not a small thing. This isn't just a little piece. This is actually a big part of encountering the Lord in our spirits and encountering his provision in our lives and his breakthrough. It's so interesting that it says we will be called repairers of the breach, the restorer of streets to dwell in. Listen, if God's called you to build something, the Lord empowers us for building what he's called us to build when we start from a place of emptying ourselves. There's so much meat in these verses. But when we fast, when we pause, when we rest, it says he will cause us to delight in him. So, I mean, it's so easy to think about the negatives of fasting. It's so easy to think, like, listen, every single time I fast, bar none, somebody calls, something happens, and it's like, hey, we're having a big meal, or hey, like, Catherine makes the best thing ever. Like, oh my gosh. I fasted this past week. Not even realizing I was going to be teaching about this. I just was doing it for me. But, of course, she's making, like, zuppa Toscana and, like, this amazing Italian soup and all these other foods and, like, you know, sourdough bread and our homemade bread maker, and I'm smelling that filling the whole house and, like, oh my gosh, you guys. But listen, I find three things happen in me when I fast. And I believe they're all spiritually described when Jesus talks about fasting. So I want to tell you what I experienced, but I also want to tell you kind of the foundation of where it comes from. Matthew 9:14, it says, the disciples of John the Baptizer, they came to Jesus, and they say, why is it that we and the Pharisees fast regularly, but not your disciples? So they're saying, like, we fast all the time. That's just part of what we do. And you guys aren't fasting. We haven't seen you. We just see you eating and drinking and having a great time. And Jesus replied, and he says, how can the sons of the bridal chamber grieve when the bridegroom is next to them? But the days of fasting will come when the bridegroom is taken away from them. I want to pause there. So he's saying, look, I'm here, right? He's the bridegroom. And he's saying, while I'm here, how can they fast? We are here. This is a celebration. He's like, this time while I'm here on the earth, we're just enjoying. Everybody is allowed, and I want them to enjoy that I'm here. But he says, the times of fasting will come. So in other words, there is a future time of fasting when he's taken away. He's talking about his time of his death and resurrection. So he's saying, after my resurrection, fasting will start happening again. But then he breaks it down really even more interestingly. He says, who would mend worn out clothing with new fabric? When the new cloth shrinks, it will rip, making the hole worse than before. And who would pour fresh new wine into an old wineskin? Eventually, the wine will ferment and make the wineskin burst, losing everything. The wine is spilled and the wineskin ruined. Instead, new wine is always poured into a new wineskin so that both are preserved. Now, Jesus talked about these things in the context of a question about fasting. So I was connecting with the Lord on this, and I was like, walk me through this, God. And I really feel like he did. See, here's what happens. I'm gonna share what I experience in fasting, and then I'm going to connect it to what Jesus was saying in these passages. The first thing that I experience when I'm fasting is cleansing. The first thing I experience, you know, when I'm fasting, my senses change. The way that I experience things changes. And all of a sudden, I'm more aware. I'm more aware of a lot of things, but I'm more aware of what's happening inside of myself. So I recognize when I find myself getting more angry or, you know, things that I would normally just walk past and ignore actually becomes noticeable to me. So, I mean, even driving while I was fasting, somebody did something weird on the road and I felt frustration rise up, but I recognized it. And it was interesting that instead of it controlling me and ruling me, I was actually able to go, huh, that's interesting that feeling is there. What do I want to do with that feeling? And I was able to kind of, from a sideways perspective, go, Lord, I don't want that in me. I don't want just this frustration to be lingering under here and then pop up whenever it wants. And so I was just began submitting that to the Lord and going, all right, wash me of that. Let's go through that. And so every time I would notice things pop up in myself, I could just take it and look at it and go, God, I'm just going to put this in your hands. And I don't want to walk in that. So there was cleansing happening inside of me. See, here's the thing. When Jesus talks about mending an old garment, right? There's a gap. There's a break in the old garment. And he says, you don't put a new cloth on it. Now, here's what Jesus was talking about. He's saying, look, in the old covenant, which is what they were still in prior to Jesus' death and resurrection, he's like, we're not going to put fasting, which is designed, one of the things of the results of fasting is filling the gaps. It's mending a hole. But he's like, that is not for now because we're still in this old covenant. He's like, I want to wait until you're in the new covenant because guess what? We're in the new covenant. We are new garments. We're made new. Does that make sense? Now I'm a new garment. And now if there's any holes that come in me, we fast and the Lord puts a new garment and patches us up. Does that make sense? Fasting actually repairs the breaches. But Jesus was saying, we're not doing this now because I need to make you new first. Once you're made new, then you fast, and part of the results of fasting is the Lord patching up things inside of us. So when we find ourselves in sin that we can't completely get freedom from, when we find ourselves in habitual behaviors, fasting is one of the ways that the Lord cleanses us and patches a new garment on us because we've already been made new. Does that make sense? I love this. I was like, this is so good when the Lord was sharing this with me. The second thing that I experience is I experience clarity. My thinking improves. My connection with his heart and his thoughts. And that really fits with what we were reading in Isaiah 58. The idea that if you want to become a builder, right? He's saying you'll be called a repairer of broken walls and broken streets. Like the pathways will be cleared and the protective walls will be rebuilt up by people that fast with him and get his thoughts. If I want to accomplish something, I need vision. And to have vision, I need clarity. And to have that, fasting is one of the ways that I get all the junk thoughts out because organically it allows things to settle. You ever like move a fish tank and it's all cloudy after you move it? That's what our lives are like sometimes. We're constantly in motion, so everything is cloudy. And fasting, what that does is that allows us to sit still and let the Lord settle the things out of us that aren't helpful and bring clarity and vision. Everything starts to become more clear. And then the third thing that I experience is connection. When I fast, I can sense his presence so much more clearly. I recognize, listen, when you fast, you have an easier, you see more, you feel more, you experience more. The light gets lighter and the dark gets darker. I can sense my sin more easily, and he cleanses me out, and things that have a hold on me begin to lose their grip. But also my sense of his presence increases, my ability to connect with him, and that's the new wineskin. See, the other thing that Jesus was explaining to them is I'm not going to pour my presence into leaky old containers. In the old covenant, you'll just burst. You won't be able to contain it. He's like, I've got to make you new. I've got to renew your spirits. He's like, what the cross is going to accomplish for you is create in you a new wineskin. So now when I pour in the new wine that comes as a result of fasting, now you're going to get filled and you won't burst. You're actually going to be able to contain me. And again, it's connected to this idea of being willing to say, I'm going to go to the place of the wilderness. I'm going to overcome the voice of the enemy through emptying myself of the stuff that I fill it with, the distractions, all of the other these things. And then in that place of victory, I'm going to get filled, I'm going to get repaired, and I'm going to get clarity. I know that's a lot of different little moving pieces, but I think it's all so powerful and it's all in there. That Jesus is giving us a way to get breakthrough. If we need healing, if we need vision, if we need his presence, and we're just not getting it, this is one of the tools that he's given us. The four C's. Right, I told you a couple weeks ago, I don't do alliteration very often, but as I was writing this, I was like, connection, clarity, and cleansing. Right? I didn't mean to. Connection, right? The filling of his spirit, clarity of thought, and cleansing. And if I was to add a fourth C, it would be crankiness. Kath will tell you, she's like, I could see Jesus in you, but man, I could see the flesh in you too. Like, I had those moments. But again, it's so good because you don't know what's in you until you have a little bit of pressure. Part of the reason that fasting is so powerful is because it applies a little bit of pressure on our souls. And when that squeeze, stuff comes out. And then there's gaps for the Lord to come in and go, I'm going to just wash the rest of this while I'm in here. We don't have to let him do that. Listen, you can fast. That's why Isaiah 58 was written. You can fast and wind up in a way worse condition than before you started if you don't choose to allow the Lord to clear out the wilderness of the enemy. If we just fast and all we're doing is not eating, that's not a real fast. All that does is allow, it exposes us more to the wild beasts and the voice of the enemy without the authority to actually drive them out. The whole point of fasting is to empty ourselves so that we can be filled with him. And as we're filled with him, that's why you can't fast and not take time in his presence. You can't fast and not expose yourself to his word. You can't fast successfully and not take time just engaging with his heart. And the things that come up and they get exposed, we have to decide, what am I going to do with this? Where am I going to put it? Listen, this is a 2.0 message. When I first met God, like face-to-face personal encounter with the Holy Spirit, it was in the middle of a three-day fast. The first time I had ever fasted in my life. And I was dying. I remember we found the kitchen. It was like the janitor's closet. And they had these little like bouillon, like cubes. Have you ever seen those? And I would just put that in some hot water, and I'm just drinking that. And I really stuck to it because I was like, I am going to do this for real. I was so excited about connecting with God, and I did. But my first powerful encounter with him happened in the context of a fast. Most breakthroughs that I've had in my life, not all of them, but many of them, can be tied back to a time of seeking his presence. Sometimes the breakthrough came months later, but the time of engaging with him in the fast came way earlier. One of the things that I try to do every single year is I try to do a 7-day fast. And this, I'm not I'm not saying this to toot my own horn. I'm saying this because I want you to understand how strongly and foundationally I believe in the importance of this. I believe in the importance of this. And when I do my 7-day fast, I just seek him. I expose myself to messages from conferences, from worship. The only books I read are spiritual books in the Word. And I just spend time, extended hours of time, just listening. Now, have I successfully done that every year? No. In fact, there's some years where the Lord actually told me to call it early. There's some years where I'd hit day 5 and he's like, you're done. You're good. I've given you what I need to give you. And so it's not about a religious thing, but I know the impact of it in my life. That's why I did it just earlier this week. Again, I had no intention on teaching on it until as we got closer to Sunday, the Lord just said, I want everybody to understand this. So I just want to encourage all of us that there's power, there's authority, there's influence that we can walk in. And if you find that you're just fighting and just kind of hitting up against the same wall, this is one of the tools the Lord has given us for breakthrough. Now I hit the busyness of life organically this last week, and I was hoping to fast a lot longer. So I actually plan on taking a couple more days next week. Because I know just there's a little bit more. I just want to make sure I can give to him. There's a little bit more I want to get poured into me. There's a little more emptying. There's a couple more wild beasts to get out. But I want to encourage us that this is not a punish yourself thing. Sometimes we fast and we think, oh, I'm so bad. I just need to get the bad stuff out of me. And like, no, it's the wilderness. It's the Bamidbar. It's the lover's hideaway. It's the place of connection and intimacy. In fact, Mark 6:31 says it beautifully. It's my favorite, one of my top favorite verses. It says, Jesus is talking to his disciples, and he said to them, come aside by yourselves to a deserted place and rest a while. Again, we see this connection between rest and going to the wilderness. And then catch this. It says, for there were many coming and going, and they did not even have time to eat. Look at how this ties it all together. They did not even have time to eat. So Jesus is saying, hey, you're already missing the food part. You're already fasting. He doesn't say, let's go eat. He doesn't say, let's go get lunch. He says, come away. He's like, you're already emptied. Now come away with me by yourselves to the wilderness and get some rest. He's like, I want you to be refreshed. I want you to be renewed. I want you to be restored. And your hunger right now is best going to be filled by me. I think this packages everything together. The wilderness, fasting, and the fact that those are places where God refreshes and restores us. Sometimes the place of refreshing and restoration is laying on the couch and just resting, right? But sometimes fasting and voluntarily letting that go is actually a way that God wants to wash through us and renew us so that we come out actually feeling refreshed. In fact, he actually promises us in Isaiah 58, if you fast selfishly, it's going to wind up in fights. But if you fast this way, you will be refreshed. You'll find yourself delighted in me. And that's the place where he gives us the desires of our heart.